The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another Mission Minded. Keep your mind on your mission on your mind. We do this show every single week. Michael Coleman, I cannot think of a better person to deal with. Excuse me, he's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, and we're starting the show several years ago, and I always talk about, what's this show about? And I was like, really, it's a business show. We talk about all types of different things. We talk about politics. We talk about how to get jobs. We talk about resume building. We talk about numbers. We do all kinds of stuff. It's great. And then, of course, we got Bite by Bite, which airs right after this on TKR and wherever you get your favorite podcast. And that show is specific to Feeding America and the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, HAFB. Hashtag that bad boy and you're good to go. A lot going on, obviously, with the president. I know people are freaking out because it seems like no one's untouchable at this point. And then we heard these three letters, DEI. I didn't know what the first time I saw DEI, I kept thinking of Dale Earnhardt Enterprises. For some reason, I saw that DE and all I could think of was Dale Earnhardt. I don't know why. But DEI, what is DEI and why are people freaking out? Let's start there.
Well, first of all, it stands for diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And really, you already started to see some elements of it over a decade ago. But really, probably 2015 is when it got its huge push. And it was part of pushing back against Trump. But then really, it caught fire when we got into COVID. And all those things, when you got the cancel culture, a lot of that was about DEI. You're not being inclusive. You're not being, and corporations all felt compelled because they're going to respond to what public opinion is. And that, you know, that, so they built all these departments within their organizations, teaching on DEI, having DEI principles, all of that.
We heard a lot about this at our institutions, did we not? I heard a lot about that, about Alabama and Auburn having to do with it with their DEI.
So then all the colleges, and you had to have a chief diversity officer, a chief equity officer. You see it in hospitals, just on and on, all these positions. And the push was, in part, it really got really strong with Black Lives Matter and all those kind of things. And there's some real pros to DEI and there's some real cons. And that's kind of what I want to talk about, is it all depends on how you're looking at this as to how you interpret the rhetoric coming from the new administration. But there's a lot of people who are really nervous right now. There's a lot of hand wringing. But this even goes back before Trump came into office. So a few years ago, it started it with the state of North Carolina, where their university system outlawed DEI and did away with it. And then the state of Alabama recently did it over the last year or so.
And can you back up just a little bit for people who don't understand, what does DEI do? What was originally DEI
set up for? What was the intent of it? Yeah. Right. So if you think about the idea of diverse, and I'm not a DEI expert, but I'm just telling you in practical terms, DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is the idea that organizations oftentimes, or people of color, oftentimes are left out of society's mainstream to include employment opportunities and other things due to sometimes intentional bias, but lots of times unintentional bias, mm-hmm. that we tend to hire people who look like us, think like us. So if you're a white person and you're in charge of hiring, it may make sense to you to hire somebody that maybe shares your perspective, whatever that is. So everything became about, you want to make sure that you enforce these principles into your hiring practices. In other words, but then the Supreme Court started coming back, and I know they hadn't talked a lot about DEI, but the old thing that we used to talk about with universities was the, and I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on it right now, but people looked at it as quotas. Mm-hmm. Like you need to look at it. If if you don't have a certain amount of people who are African American or Asian or whatever, you need that diversity.
We had that because we were regulated by the FCC, which is a government run organization. We had that in radio. We had to have a certain amount of minorities. And of course, the ongoing joke was black people don't like classic rock. Well, I'm here to tell you, you're wrong. But we had to have a certain number of black individuals that would actually work on the radio station. We certainly welcome that. Yeah. We love that. And it certainly diversified our, because we would gain us, you know, the urban audience onto a radio station, even a classic rock station. But it doesn't work in reverse. In other words, if you're going to an urban station that plays hip hop or whatever, and traditionally that would be a black or African-American oriented type of radio station, doesn't mean you have to hire white people to be on it. So I think that's
right.
That's kind of where the rub is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so the whole point is, or the on the pro side of EDI is what you find is that you become a stronger organization because people you may not have ever considered before, you find out have great talents, abilities, mm-hmm. and all that. And I don't think anybody argues with that. But what begins to happen is inevitably is with DI, you end up having to put everybody in a category. So the idea is, wait a minute, we want to be diverse, but have inclusion where we're all together. Well, you then begin to see some, and this is just a little bit of the history, you begin to see some of these safe spaces to where white people were not allowed in safe spaces. This was for people of color to lounge. And so it was almost the reverse of the 60s in some places, to where white people, you're not allowed in this room. White people, you're not allowed to even come to this conference. You're not allowed to, this is for people of color and all that. And so DEI ended up segregating and dividing and did not, you know, it purported to give a greater more strength to any organization through the diversity. And so I understand its intent. Its effect, though, wasn't always that. So you have major corporations now that have turned and run away from it. Mm-hmm. The Walmarts and all that, they are drastically reduced, because what they're finding out is, and this gets to the point of the story today because of what Trump said. So what Trump said was, they asked him, did he feel like that this accident that happened with the aircraft a few days ago in Washington, D.C., was it a result of DEI? And he goes, it's very possible. He didn't say it was. He said it's very possible. Yeah. And then everybody starts saying, how in the world can you relate this to DEI? Well, let me give you a good example. Again, I'm not saying, we don't know the facts. I'm not saying that all this was related to DEI, but let me tell you, this explains what some of the concerns are. The FAA on that particular day, the latest information is they were short 11 people mm-hmm. on shift, yet they still said, okay, well, we can obviously do this safely.
Yeah.
There was a near miss that happened last week. So they were short. Well, here was the problem. They had turned down in the last 2 years of interviews, they had turned down over 1,000 candidates because they were not diverse enough.
Okay.
In other words, they were white. Okay. So they're like, due to DEI, and DEI was their number one principle, was, hey, we're going to have diversity above all else. Then what happens, though, is now you have qualified people who are not getting a job because you're like, we want to save this for people of color. The problem is there wasn't enough people of color
that were trying to apply for the job.
That were trying to apply. So the guy who's over the FAA starts pleading with historically black colleges, HBCUs, to do more on air traffic, and starts trying to build that up and maybe provide opportunity. And again, hey, I love the idea of going into black colleges and saying, hey, maybe you've never thought about air traffic controlling and develop great programs and training programs like that. But what Trump's point is, and he has said it multiple times now, you disqualified somebody. You're supposed to be about equity and inclusion, but you disqualified them not because they weren't qualified for the job, but because they didn't have the right skin color.
Yeah.
That's the reverse of what you say DEI is all about, which is to bring people together. It's about inclusion. So as a result, you're short. You made a decision that you would rather not hire anybody than hire white people to fill these positions because you were leading with DEI. And what he's saying is, and on this point, I 100% agree. When it comes to things like air traffic controllers, you have to have the best and the brightest. If it's 100% African-American, fine. If it's 50-50, fine. But race can't be, DEI cannot be your leading determinant when it comes to issues that affect people's lives in a life or death situation.
No.
Now, if you're talking about a Department of Homeland Security and you feel like, hey, we've been hiring too many white agents and we need to look at, you know, our diversity models and all that, because there, like I said, there's unintended biases. So what it's supposed to do is you have education systems to help us learn, help primarily white people, but all of us learn what these unintended biases are. That's where white privilege came out. So you have white privilege. So you go through life and the argument for white privilege is you go through life and everything's been built by other white people. So it all makes sense to you.
Yeah.
If you're a person of color from a different background, well, there's an extra step for us is that we're having to learn what that culture is about and how to navigate in that culture. And I'm not saying there's not any validity to that.
Yeah.
But what Trump is saying is because across the government and all these organizations, DEI is the number one priority. And as a result, it could be that aircraft crashed as a result of DEI policies, not because they had somebody of color in charge. That's not the argument. What he's saying is your DEI emphasis meant you were operating unmanned, not because there was not enough qualified candidates, but they weren't your people of color qualified candidates.
Is there anything that the African community could have done, African-American community could have done to make DEI more relevant, more prevalent, better working? I hear what you're saying, and I think for the most part, and I just funny because I had a discussion this morning with a guy who owns a business who has blacks and whites working side by side. He was talking about, you know, he hires on merit. He's like, listen, I hire on merit. I have relationships with the people that come in here. And if my people come in here and they're with a black representative and a white representative, and the white representative is doing a much better job than the black representative, they don't come back and give me my business, then I have to do something. I have to either fire that individual and he's like, I don't want to see color either. I think where a lot of white people probably have a problem here is, you know, where they do feel like they've been in a situation where they were up for a job, and because of DEI or some variants thereof, they didn't
get because of qualifications.
They didn't get a job because of their skin color, and that's not what DEI was created for.
Right. But so, you have people like the lady of the Black Lives Movement who led that. She's got three mansions out in Los Angeles. She's become incredibly wealthy off a movement that was supposed to be about inequity and justice. Now, let me go back and say this. I know for a fact, coming from a small town in Alabama and growing up, so I was born in 66. I know that there were a lot of people back in the day who ran government organizations. Like, let's just say Alabama Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's been housed, our capital in Montgomery. It's an hour away from my hometown. So you knew a lot of people, and it was kind of a good old boys network. Mm-hmm. I know of people who were like the department head over several counties. And when they retired, they would have a lot of say as to who got the next job. And it could be Bubba, or it could be their brother. I mean, it was a lot of nepotism, just all that kind of stuff. So think about that for a couple of generations, and you kind of built in like who all the players are. Well, let's say you're an African owned business And you're like, hey, I want to bid on this work, but there's no entry point for you.
Yes.
And so you're trying to, you're banging into that, but you don't. So when I look at that, and if you said, see, that's not equity, because everybody doesn't have an opportunity to bid on a contract job or whatever. So then the government comes along and says, okay, you've got to at least have, and I don't know what the full stipulations are, but you've at least got to, when you put out bids for government contracts, I think you have to have receive a bid from a minority owned business. Uh-huh. And that could be a woman. It could be a person of color. It could be disabled, whatever. Now, and so just like with the civil rights movement, sometimes the hammer of the federal government is necessary to break through that wall, because left to ourselves, sometimes as humans, we're not going to give access. So when I see that, that makes total sense to me. Mm-hmm. So if you look at that through DEI, you're like, yeah, I want everybody out there who owns a construction business to get the same sheet of job opportunities, to make their honest bid on it. And then they get judged by the quality of that work and nothing else. That's ideally, people feel about it.
And from a black owned business too, depending on who you're dealing with, they may feel like if they're going in and making a bid, they may have to go so far under what the white bid is just
right.
to get the business.
To make it almost impossible.
We really don't want to hire a black business, but you know, gosh, their price is half of what it is. The next thing you know, hurting their business by doing so. So totally get that.
So that's the background. And I get that. Now, we've made a lot of progress, and I'm not saying that there's not continued inequity and that's just one example or other examples like that. But like when I say all the time, and if you just look at the city of Montgomery, the heart of the civil rights movement. So if you were arrested back in the 60s, everybody on the police force was white. All the politicians were white. All the justices were, all the judges were white. You didn't have anybody of color who could understand what you were going through. Mm-hmm. Well, in the city of Montgomery now, and in Montgomery County, you've had a black sheriff for a long time. Everybody loves him. He does a fantastic job. You have Montgomery's got his first black mayor. You've got black city council. You got black county, two of the five black county commissioners. But and then if you go a lot of the judges, both at the circuit court, district court, federal court, on and on and on in this city, there's strong African-American influence. Mm-hmm. The probate judge is African-American. So my point is, it's not the same as in the 60s. However, there are still some inequities. And I'm all for learning about what those are and thus so you have a DEI. The problem is that the pendulum then swings. You start canceling everybody that you don't like. So all the comedians and stuff, and they would go back 10 years. People were getting fired for our tweet from 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Because that's what that was about. You're not allowed to say this anymore. And so then you've got DEI started squelching free speech. You couldn't say this on a campus. You know, college campuses were liberal bastions back in the 50s and 60s to be able to have free thought and not be restricted by societies. And then it turned this total thing to where now you can't go on campus and say anything. Mm-hmm. And so all of this is interwoven in the DEI. I'm not saying that was the intention of those pushing it, but that's where it ended up. And it was such an extreme that a lot of people said, wait a minute, you're restricting speech. And the truth of the matter is, we're not seeing necessarily a better product. You know, you say the more diverse we are, the better the performance is. Mm-hmm. Well, you look in some instances and you find out, wait a minute, we've invested millions and millions and millions of dollars into DEI, but our workforce results are the same. I mean, we're not seeing an improvement in what our bottom line is. Yeah. So why are we investing all this? Because basically what the DEI folks promised was you're going to get a better organization. You're going to be, but the way it's taught and the way it's promulgated by so many organizations and by just some of the ones that are beholden to DEI, it ends up creating mistrust in organizations because, and sometimes when you try to apply corrective standards, it's, I mean, look, I face this in the nonprofit space as well. And in the military, you know, lots of times if somebody does not want to take accountability for their actions and you're trying to treat them, you try to promote the good people and you try to correct and coach the bad people. And I've had lots of people when I'm correcting them, you know, if they're a different race, blame that reason. And it's just simply because they don't want to accept responsibility, yeah. At least in my cases. Anyway, so you see, it's a huge topic. It gets very emotional and it's very complex. And so lots of times when Trump says this could be DEI or I'm getting rid of all the DEI stuff, the people oftentimes it all depends on what your experience is with DEI as to what you hear. Mm-hmm. So we got caught up a little bit when it was announced about the freezing on this spending. And we kind of got caught up a little bit in that. But Trump's real purpose is that, look, you are taking funds for the military. You are taking funds from this. Like, the military is another good example. They've put so much emphasis on transgender and acceptance of all people without saying, wait a minute, is our force stronger as a result of having transgender people? Are we a better fighting force? Are we better equipped to defend the nation? Now, some people might say yes. Some people might disagree. But the point is DEI got put to number one on everybody, every company, every government department, everybody, and every nonprofit, everything was about DEI. And instead of a meritocracy, where I think most of us land, which is we want opportunity for everybody. But the bottom line is the person who's going to do the best job gets the position or gets promoted or gets the acclimate, the pats on the back and the bonuses and all that. It's the person who's working the hardest, who's doing the best job, who's the most qualified. That's who we want to get moved up.
It sounds like to me that the DEI, in most cases, when you have laws, the intention was good. The idea was good. And then, of course, we got humans involved. And yeah. Next thing you know, we had humans that were fighting it. We had humans that were wanted to regulate it. We had people that were outliers. We're taking it, you know, too far to the other side and you know, using loopholes in order to fill their needs beyond what the actual intention of this law was. And so now all of a sudden you've got someone and sometimes you got to blow stuff up and rebuild it. What's the next step? What do you think? As a business owner, as a businessman, what's the next thing? Is there? Listen, I mean, I'm not white privilege. You can call it whatever you want. I still see it. I still see black people not being treated the same in this. I love it here because I'm from Cincinnati, and it is racist up there. The further north you go, the more racist it gets. People talk about Boston all the time. You know, yeah. I see blacks holding hands with whites here all the time. We get along. I think it's because we've had to face our fears through bombings and everything else. And we've had to face those fears. And I think because of that, it's one of the nicest places to live with blacks and whites. But
so you have a good question, which is, are you going to ever going to totally be able to eliminate biases and preferential treatment? I think
it takes generations. Yeah. I mean, it's,
but you know, it even involves a deeper discussion about race. So there's lots of times, like I've spent my last two decades in this, not about race, but more talking about the class problems. So what you'll find everywhere I've ever been, if you have middle-class black and middle-class white and middle-class Hispanic, you got no problems. It seems like the class systems operate, but if you get into the poverty class, whether you're talking about white, Hispanic, or black, then lots of times it's like, I despise that culture that comes out of that. Mm-hmm. And so, but lots of times people of color, more so than whites probably, get tagged with that. So if you're in a poverty where it's maybe gang ridden or crime ridden, and it's high African American, and it's all this kind of stuff, threatening or whatever, then other people get unfairly tagged with that. I mean, we each have problems in our own communities. You know, we sometimes get tagged with a problem with white supremacists. So, you know, and or being oppressors or colonialists and all these kind of problems. And then each ethnicity battles their own thing. The problem is humanity's broken and it's messy. And we as a whole don't like to take responsibility for our failures. And the pendulum swings. So what happened was, you know, the pendulum swung. So Brian Stevenson, who runs Equal Justice Initiative, it was said that he had said this. Look, he does not get too high or low based on what's happening. Like, because sometimes the pendulum swings and you make a lot of progress on civil rights and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then, but it inevitably gets to the point you start getting some pushback. And you don't really have to go that far back. I mean, you go back to the civil rights movement. Lots of times you'll see this is the first Black Republican to serve in the Congress since, I'm drawing a blank on the R name that, right after the Civil War.
Yeah.
Because what happened was when there was freedom, slaves were free, Black people began to have businesses and they had political influence and all that. And then inevitably there was a pushback from white culture. You start seeing the Klan take prominence and try to push all that back. Yeah, that's all that kind of stuff. So the pendulum is going to swing. And then you had civil rights movement where it swung back. And then you had kind of a pushback a little bit, like this is too far. And then Black Lives Matter. Well, this is the pendulum's back over here now. And so how you navigate that really depends on which side of the political aisle you on and how you look at that. Like right now, if you're against Trump or if you're like very pro DEI, you're like, well, America's racist. See, this proves Trump's racist. This proves America's racist. Trump's over here going, no, we've gone too far that we're leaving holes in the FAA is not hiring enough air traffic controllers because they're white, you know, even though they're qualified. Yeah. Because they're saving this for candidates that don't even exist. And as a result, now we've almost had two major aircrafts just at that one airport. There's no telling how many other near misses that are reported. So it gets messy. It gets tough. It gets challenging because the worst thing in the world for a white person to get labeled is racist. And so we try to show proper deference to this issue. And like, hey, I will never say I see it as clearly as an African-American or Hispanic person or Asian or whatever. I don't pretend to. I do try to listen to all sides and I do try to understand the perspectives. But just like they will never understand how difficult it is as a white person, if you do get labeled as racist, you want to talk about the scarlet letter. That stuff doesn't scrub off with Ajax.
No.
And it's an incredibly difficult thing. So I think just the more we can have honest conversations, I think DEI does some good things. I think, though, it had become entrenched in what we're doing and a lot of biases, a lot of prejudice, a lot of was swinging back the other way and to the actual harm as we see. Again, I'm not attributing to it, but I certainly can make a strong case that EDI, DEI did in fact play a factor in what happened.
What are your thoughts? info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. Make sure you hashtag it and put Mission Minded on there and we'll find it. And of course, another great show, Bite by Bite, which is another show with Michael Coleman coming up here next on our podcast network. And wherever you get your favorite podcasts, we're available in every major industry. Michael, thank you so much. Till next week, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.